Tonight, breaking news as we come on the air on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Late today, a CDC panel of experts leaving the temporary pause in place, saying they need more data after reports of six women suffering rare blood clots after receiving the shot. One death, one woman in the hospital, the pause affecting thousands of vaccination sites, one in four locations in the U.S. using that vaccine. And what the head of the White House task force said today about the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. Also tonight, the former police officer Kim Potter has now been charged with second-degree manslaughter for the deadly shooting of 20-year-old Dante Wright. Potter allegedly mistaking her gun for her taser. The 26-year veteran was training another officer as this all unfolded. The trial of former police officer Derek Chauvin tonight, a former chief medical examiner testifying for the defense, suggesting underlying health issues were the cause of George Floyd's death. News on U.S. troops in Afghanistan tonight. President Biden revealing today his plans to end America's longest war, withdrawing U.S. troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. And what the CIA director said just today about the risk if U.S. troops leave. The desperate search underway at this hour to find survivors from a capsized vessel in the Gulf. At least one person found dead, several others still missing tonight. The attack on the Capitol and the scathing new report tonight from the Inspector General. Did Capitol Police ignore intelligence warnings of an attack on Congress? And why were officers told not to use the most aggressive force against the Capitol rioters? Bernie Madoff has died in prison, so whatever happened to the billions stolen? Did American investors get their money back? And the new CDC study tonight on the virus, airplanes, and the middle seat.
From ABC News World Headquarters in New York, this is World News Tonight with David Muir.
Good evening, and it's great to have you with us here on a Wednesday night. And we begin with that breaking headline from the CDC just before we came on the air tonight. An advisory committee late today leaving the temporary pause for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in effect, saying they simply need to know more. After those extremely rare reports of six women who suffered severe blood clots, one died, another in the hospital, this temporary halt affecting about one in four vaccine sites in this country giving the Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccine. The advisory panel meeting this afternoon adjourning without a clear recommendation yet on how to move forward, leaving that pause in place, saying they will try to meet again in a week to 10 days. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine using similar technology to the AstraZeneca vaccine in Europe, that vaccine has also triggered some concern in Europe over rare blood clots there, at least 19 reported deaths. Tonight, the White House now saying, even without Johnson & Johnson temporarily, that there is more than enough of the other vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, to vaccinate all Americans, to even accelerate vaccinations, they suggested. ABC senior national correspondent Steve Osunsami leading us off tonight with late news from the CDC in Atlanta.
A CDC advisory panel tonight says it needs more time and information to respond to the new concerns about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which means for now, Americans should continue holding off using this brand of the COVID vaccine.
We do not have to arrive at a vote today or a recommendation today. If we need more time to think about this, we can reconvene later this week or this weekend.
A very small number of women who suffered blood clots after getting the shot caused health officials to put a hold on using the drug. Health officials here worry that this potential adverse reaction looks a little too similar to what happened in Europe with the AstraZeneca vaccine. The AstraZeneca vaccine is made using similar technology as the Johnson & Johnson. And in Europe, 19 people died.
There are some rather strong similarities about this with regard to the time frame following vaccination, particularly importantly, the clinical syndrome of these clots together with low platelets. So there are a lot of similarities there that you just can't miss that.
The scientists are looking for any link between the six women who got sick, and they're investigating whether the blood clots were an immune response. All six women were between 18 and 48 years old. They got sick within 2 weeks of getting vaccinated. Some of the clots formed in veins of the sinus and prevented blood from draining out of the brain. One woman died. Three are still hospitalized. The holdup on using the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has had a huge impact on these 7,000 locations where it was the only shot they were giving. one out of every four vaccine locations in America was only using Johnson & Johnson.
I get why they're doing it out of the abundance of caution, but the statistics were so low for someone like myself to get, you know, the blood clotting they were talking about and all that. I was willing to take the risk anyway.
The race is on to find available shots from Pfizer and Moderna for appointments that are already scheduled.
All the Pfizer and all the Johnson I have. Of course, it makes it very hard because I have literally hundreds of doses of Johnson that I can't use.
They're pretty frustrated at this clinic in Los Angeles that's already been struggling to vaccinate underserved communities. Tonight, the Biden administration is saying that there's still more than enough vaccine.
I want to be clear that we have more than enough Pfizer and Moderna vaccine supply to continue or even accelerate the current pace of vaccinations.
All right, Steve Ostensami live at the CDC tonight. And Steve, I know the advisory committee plans to meet again on this. Any idea how soon?
Well, David, this group's next meeting is scheduled for May 5th, but they're hoping they can meet again in a week or so. There was a lot of concern today about making a decision without all the proper information. They're also still watching about 3 million Americans who've recently gotten a Johnson & Johnson vaccine within the last few weeks. They say it's still very possible we could see a few more of these rare cases that concern them. David.
All right. Steve Ostensami leading us off tonight. Steve, thank you. The other major story developing today, the former officer in the shooting death of 20-year-old Dante Wright in Minnesota. She's now been charged with second-degree manslaughter. Kim Potter, a 26-year veteran who was training another officer when this unfolded. Body camera video can be heard, her shouting taser, then firing her gun instead. ABC's Stephanie Ramos in Minnesota again tonight.
Tonight, the now former officer who killed Dante Wright charged with second-degree manslaughter days after this traffic stop. According to the Washington County Attorney's Office, Kim Potter fired one round into Wright's left side with her Glock 9mm handgun after yelling, "Taser, taser, taser." You can see a yellow taser on her belt in this photo. The office adding in a statement, certain occupations carry an immense responsibility, and none more so than a sworn police officer. Today, the Wright family's lawyer questioning how Potter, a Brooklyn Center police veteran, appeared to have mixed up the two.
At what point did you not feel that this was a gun in your hand versus a taser? And so the family, obviously, they are glad she got charged.
Authorities say Potter, on the force for 26 years, was actually training another officer Sunday when Wright was pulled over for an expired tag. As they tried to arrest the unarmed 20-year-old for an outstanding warrant, a struggle broke out. Moments later, Potter firing that fatal shot. She resigned along with the police chief. For a third night in a row, protesters taking to the streets, outraged over the killing of the young father, the mother of his child, remembering him.
He was a good father. He loved his son, and he wanted to see him grow up. He just was a very active father.
Potter was brought to this Hennepin County jail. If convicted, she could face up to 10 years in prison. But if the case goes to a jury, she could also be acquitted. David.
Stephanie Ramos tonight. Steph, thank you. And we should note, just a few miles from that scene, the trial of former police officer Derek Chauvin in the death of George Floyd. And today, the defense calling a former chief medical examiner who testified that underlying health issues were the cause of George Floyd's death. ABC's Alex Perez covering the trial.
Today, the defense calling a forensic pathologist who testified that the manner of George Floyd's death, officially classified as a homicide, was actually undetermined, citing a series of potential causes, including heart disease and drug use.
How did the heart and drugs contribute to the cause of death?
They were significant.
The defense also floating a new theory that Floyd inhaled carbon monoxide from the tailpipe of the squad car.
There is exposure to a vehicle exhaust, so potentially carbon monoxide poisoning.
Prosecutors then demanding proof and the witness admitting he had none.
You haven't seen any data or test results that showed Mr. Floyd had a single injury from carbon monoxide. Is that true?
That is correct, because it was never sent to the laboratory for that test.
I asked you whether it was true, sir. Yes or no?
It is true.
Dr. David Fowler conceding the officers should have tried to help Floyd when he became non-responsive.
Are you critical of the fact that he wasn't given immediate emergency care when he went into cardiac arrest?
Yeah, as a physician, I would agree.
And, David, we expect the defense will rest their case tomorrow. So far, they've called 7 witnesses. The prosecution called 38 witnesses. We could learn soon who was more effective as early as next week when the jury gets the case. David?
All right, Alex Perez tonight. Alex, thank you. We turn now to news on U.S. troops in Afghanistan. President Biden today revealing his plan for all U.S. troops to leave Afghanistan by September 11th, the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. And what the CIA director said just today about the risk if U.S. troops leave. Here's our senior White House correspondent, Mary Bruce, tonight.
At Arlington Cemetery tonight, President Biden honoring the lives lost as he announced he's ending the 20-year war in Afghanistan, withdrawing all U.S. troops by this September 11th.
It's time to end America's longest war.
Over the last 2 decades, 2,312 Americans were killed, more than 20,000 wounded, and nearly $825 billion spent. Biden today saying they succeeded in responding to the 9/11 attacks.
We delivered justice to bin Laden a decade ago, and we've stayed in Afghanistan for a decade since. Since then, our reasons for remaining in Afghanistan have become increasingly unclear.
On Capitol Hill today, the head of the CIA with a sobering assessment.
When the time comes for the U.S. military to withdraw, the U.S. government's ability to collect and act on threats will diminish. That's simply a fact.
But he also said Al-Qaeda, the group behind 9/11, does not have the capacity today to carry out an attack against the U.S.
And Mary Bruce with us live tonight from the White House. And Mary, we noted while we were on the air today that the president was speaking today from the Treaty Room, the same room where President George W. Bush told the nation nearly 20 years ago we were in Afghanistan. And now 20 years later, President Biden saying we must end this forever war. Mary, President Biden revealing he spoke with former President Bush.
David, the president says he spoke with Bush yesterday to inform him of his decision. He did not say how the former president responded, but Biden stressed that the two of them are absolutely united in their respect and support for the valor and courage of the men and women who have served. David.
All right, Mary Bruce tonight. Mary, thank you. And also from Washington tonight, a scathing new report on the attack on the Capitol. What the inspector general has found, did Capitol Police ignore intelligence warnings that Congress itself was the target? Here's our Chief Justice correspondent, Pierre Thomas.
Tonight, a new Inspector General report revealing just 3 days before the attack, Capitol Police intelligence analysts wrote that Congress itself is the target and that the Stop the Steal movement had the likelihood of attracting white supremacists, militia members, and others who actively promote violence. Today, the intelligence failure drawing sharp criticism from the senator who chairs the committee overseeing the Capitol Police.
In the end, they didn't do what they needed to do.
The inspector general's findings in sharp contrast to former Capitol security officials who recently told Congress they could not have anticipated the broad violence that left more than 100 officers injured and possibly killed another.
No entity, including the FBI, provided any new intelligence regarding January 6th.
The inspector general also finding stunning security failures the day of the insurrection. Shields that easily shattered from the blows from the mob. Some officers vulnerable without shields because they were locked away inside a bus. And the inspector general questioning why officers were also told not to use the most aggressive force against the mob, like stun grenades, which might have helped push back the rioters. And David, tonight we learned that prosecutors have closed the investigation into the fatal shooting of Ashley Babbitt, who was killed by Capitol Police when she tried to climb through a broken window during the attack. Authorities say the officer justifiably fired in self-defense and to defend Congress, David.
All right, Pierre Thomas, who continues to follow this. Pierre, thank you. There is a desperate search underway in the Gulf of Mexico tonight after a vessel capsized. At least one person found dead, 12 crew members still missing off the coast of Louisiana. ABC's Elwin Lopez in Port Fouchon, Louisiana tonight.
Tonight, off the Louisiana coast, a race against time to find survivors from this capsized vessel.
We were saturating the area with available resources to assist in the rescue mission.
19 people were on board the Seacorp Power when it capsized during unusually powerful storms. The 129-foot vessel has 250-foot legs that can raise it out of the water to work on offshore platforms. Winds gusting to 75 miles per hour in the area, a Good Samaritan sending a distress message just before 4:30 p.m. The Coast Guard and Good Samaritans saving six people from the rough seas, finding one other person who did not survive. Families of the missing anxiously awaiting word tonight.
Trying to hold our heads up and still try to be positive and just stand on faith, you know.
And David, the Coast Guard telling me just moments ago that their efforts to find those missing will continue throughout the night here. David.
All right, Elwin Lopez reporting in tonight. Elwin, thank you. And we learned today that Bernie Madoff has died in prison at the age of 82, the mastermind of the biggest Ponzi scheme in American history. And we wondered, whatever happened to the billions? Did investors get their money back? Here's ABC's Whit Johnson tonight.
The mastermind of the largest Ponzi scheme in American history, dying behind bars in North Carolina at the age of 82. Bernie Madoff's health deteriorating in recent months, in a wheelchair, suffering from kidney disease.
He was a aging, debilitated man who was in many ways broken at this point in his life.
Madoff died 12 years into a 150-year sentence. The disgraced financier defrauding thousands of investors, pleading guilty to the scheme which unraveled shortly after the 2008 financial crisis.
He's not only destroyed my life, but he's destroyed the lives of thousands of people.
Madoff's wife, Ruth Madoff, reportedly living quietly out of the public eye in Connecticut and Florida, always claimed she knew nothing.
David, the fraud was ultimately valued at $17.5 billion. Most of that, more than $14 billion, has now been recovered for the victims. David?
$14 billion recovered. Whit, thank you. When we come back here tonight, the new CDC study this evening on the virus, airplanes, and the middle seat.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, prosecutors revealing more about the break in the case, the disappearance of Kristen Smart nearly 25 years ago in San Luis Obispo. Authorities charging Paul Flores with murder, saying he killed Smart during an attempted sex assault. His father also charged, allegedly helping to hide the body. The CDC tonight in a new study about lowering the risk of COVID when you fly. The CDC says keeping middle seats open could reduce passenger exposure by more than 50% on some planes, just as some major airlines now fill those middle seats. To the index of other news, and First Lady Dr. Jill Biden underwent a medical procedure today, President Biden going with her to an outpatient center this morning. The White House calling it a common medical procedure, saying she is fine and now resuming her normal schedule. And tonight, here's some news about ABC News. Kimberly Godwin has been named the next president of ABC News, making her the first black woman to lead a broadcast network's news division. Godwin spent more than a decade at CBS, most recently serving as their executive vice president of news. She spent many years in local news before that in communities across this country. Peter Rice, chairman of Disney General Entertainment Content, saying throughout Kim's career, she has distinguished herself as a fierce advocate for excellence, collaboration, and inclusion, and for the vital role of accurate news reporting. Godwin saying she is honored to take on this stewardship and that she's excited for what we will achieve together. And we are too. Finally tonight here, we are grateful to our teachers in this pandemic, and the students are too. The teacher America Strong. Tonight, the surprise thank you for a teacher in this pandemic.
We're going to look at probability.
Ms. Wendy Franklin, a biology teacher at Winston Churchill High School in Potomac, Maryland.
No one's on camera right now.
She asks why none of her students are on camera.
Ms. Franklin?
Yeah.
Well, the whole class wanted to thank you for being such a warm and bright and happy person during this whole semester.
Oh, I'm gonna cry.
Then suddenly, each of the students holding their own thank yous.
Oh, thank you guys, that's so sweet. I very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Franklin.
How am I supposed to teach now? Jeez, I'm teared up.
We, like, couldn't have done it without you, you know? You're just such a great teacher.
And with us tonight...
Hi, David.
Hi, David.
Hi, David.
The students on why they did it.
Ms. Franklin helped her students grow as people.
Always keeping us engaged, having fun.
Always been there for us, whether it be questions we had, clarification, or even just life advice.
And Ms. Franklin, too.
What I can tell you, David, is that that thank you message nearly made my heart explode with gratitude.
Loved it. Gratitude for Ms. Franklin and for all of our teachers. I'll see you tomorrow.